certainly just mention a couple of items that have been fairly prominent in the news. Certainly in America, the hurricane that's heading towards Florida is quite prominent. And certainly please be remembering Joyce and her daughter Kelly and their families. Joyce and her husband have managed to get out of the area, I believe. Kelly and her husband and family are not out of the area, but they've moved into a hotel. So just be remembering them. And certainly it's a sign of the times, the kind of devastating weather that's occurring. As I mentioned, I think last week, about the rain that we've had over here. And even now, I mean, the amount of blight that there is around is quite remarkable. It's more than normal. Just be pleased you're not over in certain parts of West Africa, however. It said that children fled in terror as swarms of ravenous locusts invaded Senegal's capital, Dakar, yesterday, devouring every patch of greenery in their path. Countless insects attacked trees, lawns, enveloping them in a crawling yellow carpet. Flying locusts hurled into the windscreen of the city's drivers and enmeshed themselves in the clothes and hair of anyone caught outside. The largest swarms for 15 years, summoning biblical images of a plague, are advancing across West Africa. A single locust will consume its own weight in food every day. More than 16 million acres of farmland in some of the world's poorest countries has already been damaged, and President Wade of Senegal has likened the crisis as a war between humankind and locusts. Only an operation mounted with military precision will, he said, halt the locusts' advance from their breeding ground south of the Atlas Mountains. So that is Senegal. Certainly at the moment it hasn't gone that far south, but it's certainly it's a sign of the times. It's part of what we should be expecting. But for people that are actually living in the areas, it is not pleasant at all. But I think the main area that I want to comment on today is what in fact has taken a place over in the former Soviet Union, the hostage crisis that ended in a bloodbath, and really the Chechen terrorists, and these were women terrorists that blew up themselves, plus about 250 others. And apparently, I think it's about 650. Again, these figures, they go back and forth, that managed to get it away. But the paper this morning had just page after page of photographs from the area. I don't really want to go into all the account of the horror, there's no need of that, but the significance of it, I think, is very important, and the fact that we need to look at the significance of terrorism and the way in which this particular form of terrorism has arisen. I know I've done it before, but there are aspects here that also came to light. We were watching a program early yesterday evening about days that changed the world, and it was on terrorism and on certain incidents of terrorism, and it suddenly really occurred to me and to my wife that what we're seeing today was not around at all when Mr. Armstrong was alive. And it's that crucial thing that I want to bring to everybody's attention, that we're looking at something which is radically different from anything that Mr. Armstrong witnessed. And so we've got to make sure that we use the way in which Mr. Armstrong analyzed events and look at this particular incident and try and understand the meaning behind it. Now, this is going to become probably more prevalent, because as we move forward in time, we know that there's going to be a false prophet, we know that he's going to work miracles, but we don't know all the details. And as we see certain of the details arise, we are going to have to look at it the way we've been taught, and we're going to have to be honestly applying the Word of God in the way that we've been taught, faithfully and honestly, and that requires the Spirit of God. Now, the case of this particular Russian siege, this is from Thursday. It says, bribery lets the terrorists drive a hole through the Russian security. It says, each time Chechen terrorists strike a fresh blow against Russia, the same question is asked, with security supposedly at ever higher levels, how do they ever reach their targets? The answer is usually is that they have bribed their way through. And apparently this is what in fact they feel has happened here. It says, in one of Russia's most notorious terrorist incidents, Shamil Basayev of the Chechen warlord led a convoy of more than 100 heavily armed rebels dozens of miles across southern Russia in 1995, passing through more than 24 checkpoints. And he later joked that we would have got all the way to Moscow if our money hadn't run out. Now this actually ties in with another article which I downloaded from the BBC website about how the rebels keep fighting. And it says, since the collapse of the Soviet Union, Russia and neighboring countries have been awash with arms and munitions bought or occasionally seized from Russian military bases. Sometimes bases would report a raid in order to cover up the black market sales. Now, if this is happening, not only, as far as we understand, this is happening not only in the small arms and rocket-powered grenades, but it may well be happening in nuclear areas as well. And this is where the real worry comes. When the Russian army decided to abandon bases in Chechnya in 1992, 42 tanks and 29,000 machine guns were left behind, according to official figures. Experts claim that the real figure was lower, as large parts of the arsenal had already been bought and exported by the Chechen arms dealers. Kalashnikov rifles were on sale for a few hundred dollars at Grozny's central market long before the conflict broke out in 1994. And there are also numerous cases of in that war when Russian soldiers sold weapons directly to their enemies. It says, in the latest conflict, it's reported that members of one tank battalion sold the explosive from their tank's reactive armor. Presumably there's some kind of reactive armor on the outside of the tanks that have explosive that fires out against any weapon that's come against them. It says, arms have also entered Chechnya from Azerbaijan and Georgia. It said it's been estimated that radical Islamic groups, some of which have declared a jihad or holy war against Russia, may have brought the Chechen rebels tens of millions of dollars. London-based Sheikh Omar Bakri Mohammed says that his supporters in Britain are not alone in having sent money and hundreds of volunteers to Chechnya. The recruits join the military wing of the International Islamic Front, headed by the notorious Saudi dissident Osama bin Laden, and are trained in Pakistan, where the Legion Chechen warlord Shamil Basayev himself underwent training about 10 years ago. Now that was dated back in March, but it still gives a picture, particularly because this other article that I mentioned about the bribery was just this last Thursday, as to what in fact is happening within the Russian area. Another interesting point that is going on that seems to happen, if you notice, we were discussing before the Bible study, how it seems to happen around the time of an election that these atrocities occur. And it says, Putin ally top poll is in the Chechen election. It said, a pro-Kremlin formal policeman looks certain to be elected president of Chechnya last night after a week of rebel attacks that have made a mockery of Moscow's claim to have pacified the republic. The election was widely seen as rigged, and Alkanov, a relative unknown without strong, I've never heard of him, I don't know if you have, but a relatively unknown without a strong power base, is unlikely to be able to end 13 years of rebellion. And in the past week alone, guerrilla raids have killed about 50 pro-Moscow security personnel in the capital, Grozny. So we see that as far as the elections are concerned, that they're actually choosing the timing very carefully. And in addition to that, you see how in fact they are managing to get hold of their various weaponry. Now the reason why it's very important is that the Caspian Crossroads, this is from the Caspian Crossroads magazine, The History and Politics of Chechen Oil by Robert E. Ebel. This again I downloaded, but it says that the oil district of Grozny was next to Baku the most important Russian oil area before the revolution. Oil had been produced from shallow wells northwest of the city of Grozny as early as 1833, although commercial production did not commence until 1983. He then goes on, Grozny oil hit a pre-revolutionary peak of 33,500 barrels a day in 1915 and accounted for about 18% of Russian oil production. It then goes on, it says, over the years, Grozny has become a key oil pipeline juncture because of its importance as an oil refinery center, supplying consumers in the North Caucasus and supplying special lubricants and paraffins to the country as a whole. Grozny is also a juncture for natural gas from gas fields in Russia and also from Central Asia. It's a crucial area in that regard. Now, it is because of the conflict, the article then goes on and shows how, in fact, this is becoming less so. That in fact the Russians are trying to divert the oil and the natural gas away from the Chechen area. But it is an area which is quite crucial. And isn't it interesting that here we find the Islamic State sitting in such an area? Here we find Saudi Arabia, an Islamic state, sitting on the largest reserves of oil in the world. And there just seems to be there is something about this, and at the same time we see this rise of suicide bombing. This is from Thursday again, September the 2nd. It says, back to school amid a wave of terror. The opening of the school year has taken place amidst a rash of terrorist atrocities. In the Caucasian Republic of North Ossetia yesterday, armed men and women stormed into a secondary school on its first day back and took an estimated 400 people hostage. Now the figure went up, obviously. They threatened to murder 50 children for every one of their number killed and 20 for every one wounded. And the raid follows closely on a suicide bombing outside a Moscow underground station which killed 9 and the blowing up of 2 airliners where the death toll was 90. Having returned early from his holiday on the Black Sea after the plane crashes, Vladimir Putin must feel under siege. In Israel, on the eve of the new school year, 16 died in suicide bombings on 2 buses in Beersheba after a number of summer of relative calm. The attacks have heightened the controversy over Ariel Sharon's proposal to close the Jewish settlements in the Gaza Strip, his critics arguing that withdrawal would reward and embolden the terrorists and make more urgent the building of the southern section of the barrier between Israel proper and the West Bank. Yesterday, the government threatened Syria with retaliation for harboring members of Hamas, which claimed responsibility for the bombings. In Iraq, meanwhile, 12 Nepalese workers have been murdered by a rebel group linked with Al-Qaeda, and the most lethal case of hostage killing in the recent wave of abductions. Add the seizure of 2 French journalists whose fate at the time of writing remains in doubt, and it's clear that despite the Najaf ceasefire, the pressure on the interim government and the American-led coalition forces has hardly eased. So you see, it's not just this one incident, it's all over the world. There are trouble spots sprouting up. All these incidents are a reminder of what the target of Muslim extremism are up against, or what the targets of Muslim extremism are up against. Terrorists who set scant store by their own lives, let alone those of the unfortunate people who fall into their hands. Now this, we saw things happening when Mr. Armstrong was alive, which were things like, I mean, it started basically back in probably about 1968 with Black September. You remember Black September? Dawson's Field in Jordan, apparently there was an El Al hijacking that went wrong, and a woman terrorist, Lala Khaled, was captured by the British and held in a British prison. And the PFLP, do you remember the PFLP, the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine? But you see, what was it actually doing? It was attacking primarily Israel. That was who it was against. It was a Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine. So it was attacking Israel primarily. And this ended in almost like three planes were blown up, but there were no casualties within the blowing up of the planes. Now, whether in fact anybody died afterwards, because they were used almost like a ransom back in the Jordanian conflict with the Palestinians. But here, as it says, It's, we're now up against terrorists who set scant store by their own lives, let alone those of the unfortunate people who fall into their hands. Quote, "They love Pepsi-Cola, but we love death," unquote, was how one Taliban jihadi expressed his confidence that the Americans would never win. The supreme instrument of that morbid philosophy is a suicide bomber striking at soft targets. Now, you can see it in several places. There's another one here from, I think it was Friday, where the motorcycle killer gives the Thai army vital insight into the terrorist methods. It says, sitting on a hospital bed and guarded by comrades of the soldier he murdered, Abdullah Akor explained his part in a southern Thailand's Islamic separatist insurgency. Following orders from the commander of his cell, like him, a teacher in the Islamic school, Akor and a fellow militant fell in behind a pair of soldiers on a motorcycle in Yaha one morning, and when their target slowed down, they overtook them, and Akor, the pillion passenger, shot one of the soldiers dead with a 9mm pistol. So here he's actually caught and he's fighting back and gives information, but that's in Thailand. France, it's got another article here. It talks about the three dead as a Nepalese riot over the Iraqi deaths. At least three people died in Kathmandu, erupted yesterday with angry mobs attacking Muslims and overturning overseas recruitment agencies who they blame for the murder of 12 Nepalese workers in Iraq. So again, there's this backlash occurring against what actually has happened. France unites behind the hostage report. This is important because this is on the 2nd, whichever the 2nd, that's Thursday, isn't it? It says the Pope yesterday backed appeals for the release of two French journalists held captive and threatened with death in Iraq. He appealed for Georges Malibrant and Christian Chesneau to be treated with humanity and returned unharmed to their families as soon as possible. You see, because this is religious, this is another reason why it becomes very significant. Before, it was the popular front for the liberation of Palestine. It was political. It wasn't religious, but this is religious. And what we're looking at is, we know that a united Europe will arise, and it will be a resurrected Holy Roman Empire. And the one enemy, the enemy, bar none, of the Holy Roman Empire were the Ottoman Turks, were the Arab world, basically. So you're looking at this Islam being the enemy number one. You're looking at a trigger that could bring about what we see within Europe. I also personally feel, and it's only a personal feeling, that it could well be the thing that brings about the demise of the Western world as we know it. In other words, America being the predominant force within the world. And then from there, we look at a united Europe who will go into America for whatever reason and then simply mop up. Because it gives the indication in over in Isaiah 10, where, you know, he goes in there's nothing peeps. There's no resistance, none whatsoever. It is nothing, you know, nothing peeps whatever. Now, another thing that is happening as well, I mentioned to you about Chechnya being an area which is of crucial importance. Because of oil. But another article that was, let's see, where is this? This is on an Australian newspaper, I think it is, or a radio show, I think it was. This is on Monday the 9th of August, so just this, not that long ago. It says, Mark Colvin said, if you think you're paying too much for the petrol now, brace yourself. An expert from one of the most oil-rich countries in the world say that the price per litre should soon more than double, and he says that's his conservative estimate. Dr. Ali Samsam Bakhtari is a senior planning expert with the National Iranian Oil Company and is in Australia to warn that the world's demand for oil is now close to outstripping supply. The problem, he said, is not in the Middle East countries like Iran, Iraq and Saudi Arabia, which still have plenty, but in other producers such as Australia and Indonesia, which are both net exporters of oil but are becoming net importers. So here we see the other areas, not the Arabic areas, but the other areas that are suddenly becoming deficient, so that making the Arabs even more powerful in that regard. And it says, and meanwhile, with China's phenomenal economic growth, the worldwide demand is growing and growing, and now it regularly matches peak production of 81 million barrels a day. The result, the spiraling prices we've seen in the last 6 months, from $30 a barrel last December to a whisker under 44 today. So that's the result that we see. But he goes on in this interview and shows that it says, in the actual interview, it says the supply side is limited. We are reaching the limits of the planet very soon. We cannot produce much more oil than we're producing today. And the interviewer says, well, how soon? What kind of time frame are you saying about this? And this Sam Bakhtari says, I'm talking about 2 to 3 years from now. The interviewer says, 2 or 3 years? Yes, 2 or 3 years. Yes, 2006 or 2007. So that's his estimate of when this time will come. But you put in there terrorism as well, and you now have quite a volatile mix. You have something which is, and you're looking at suicide terrorism. Now, the striking out against the West, I suppose you can look at it about 1988. There was, you know, really striking out against the West, and that was Lockerbie that began the striking out against the West. Now, you had the Iranian crisis as well before that, but Lockerbie, you know, the Pan Am 103 that came down, was indeed a day that changed the world. But you know when the first suicide bombing was? You know, the first suicide bombing by Hamas was the 4th of April 1994. This is why I say this has not been seen with the time of Mr. Armstrong. We are witnessing something which is new. We are witnessing something which is religiously inflamed. It is a religion that is diametrically opposite to the Catholic religion that we know that is going to be predominant within Europe. There is traditionally this crusader element within the Holy Roman Empire. And we are witnessing this on such a frequency across the world. So, you know, when you, if we just turn over to Psalm 83, Psalm 83 again, and just remind ourselves of this, you know, this scripture is in here. It was quoted within the Plain Truth during Mr. Armstrong's when he was alive and putting the church back on track, and it was pointed out to us with his approval. But Psalm 83, it says, do not keep silence, O God. Do not hold your peace, and do not be still, O God. For lo, your enemies make a tumult, and those that hate you have lifted up their head. They've taken crafty counsel against your people and consulted against your hidden ones. Now, how much that will, could that be applied to the actual church in the future time? Whether in fact that will be the case, I'm not sure. We'll certainly see. It says, they have said, come and let us cut them off from being a nation, that the name of Israel may be no more in remembrance. For they have consulted together with one consent. They are confederate against you. So these groups are all confederate. The tabernacle of Edom and the Ishmaelites of Moab and the Hagarenes. Now notice Edom and Moab. But they're confederate with all these other Arabic groups. Gebel, Ammon, Amalek, the Philistines, or the Palestinians, with the inhabitants of Tyre. Notice also, Asher, or Assyria, is joined with them. So you've got Assyria, or Germany, who's joined with them. They, that's Assyrians, have helped the children of Lot. That's Moab and Ammon. Now, Moab and Ammon, you're looking at Jordan. You know, the reason why, when you look at what happened with the Iraq war, the French and the Germans were against it, vehemently against it. And one of the large reasons why they were so vehemently against it, because they had economic interests with Iraq. Now, Iraq, right on the border of Jordan, undoubtedly the people of Moab and Ammon would probably go into Iraq to some degree. And these people have been helped by Assyria. They've been helped to what degree we don't know, and it certainly fits within the prophecy here that they've helped the children of Lot, and these children of Lot are then in collusion with all the other Islamic nations. And when we look at that, there's another aspect as well that we need to bear in mind, that these, I saw an interview with one of the hostages that was taken in this theater bombing. Do you remember the theater bombing in Moscow? About the best part of a year ago now. But this hostage was saying that these women that were there were totally expressionless. They were the black widows. These were the Chechen widows whose husbands had been murdered by Russian, or been killed in fighting by the Russian troops. Totally expressionless, completely uncaring. There was nothing that would swerve, make them swerve. And the expressionless, almost staring expression on their face. Now, if you turn over to Revelation, just again, we must be aware of this. We must realize where these things are coming from. Revelation 12, let's have a look at that to start off with and just remind ourselves as to where it talks about in Ephesians 6 that we don't wrestle with flesh and blood. But Revelation 12, verse 9 says, "And the great dragon was cast out, the old serpent called the devil and Satan, which deceives the whole world. He was cast out to the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. And I heard a loud voice saying in heaven, Now is come salvation and strength and the kingdom of our God with the power of his Christ, for the accuser of our brethren is cast down, which accused them before our God day and night. And they overcame him by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony, and they did not love their lives to the death." Now that event, according to Mr. Armstrong, he felt that it occurred when the Attorney General took over the church. He said that he felt that that was the case. And certainly the subsequent events, he that restrained until he was taken out of the way, and then the subsequent events certainly indicate that the church was totally shattered and destroyed. And it was destroyed not by flesh and blood. It was destroyed from satanic forces. And we need to be aware of that. It says, "Therefore rejoice, you heavens, and you that dwell in them. Woe to the inhabitants of earth and to the sea, for the devil has come down to you, having great wrath, because he knows that he's got a short time. And when the dragon saw that he was cast to the earth, he persecuted the woman which brought forth the man-child." So that was the first thing that happened. "And to the woman were given great wings of a great eagle, that she may fly into the wilderness." So what isn't mentioned there is the shattering that takes place. But we have been, and we are still persecuted, and we do not recognize where that comes from. But there's also this element when you're looking at the things that are going to happen in the world. Turn over to Revelation 16. Revelation 16. The things that are prophesied to occur within the world, it says in verse 12, "And the sixth angel poured out his vial upon the great river Euphrates, and the water thereof was dried up." So there you're looking at Iraq, and the crucial area that Iraq is, "and it was dried up, that the way of the kings of the east may be prepared." So presumably some kind of a drought to such a degree in the northern mountains of Iraq, or into those areas where the Euphrates are generated, that allows the armies to come across. "And I saw three unclean spirits like frogs come out of the mouth of the dragon, and the mouth of the beast, and the mouth of the false prophet." So the thing that's going to rise in Europe is going to be satanically inspired. And the thing that could well allow this to come about, could be terrorism. It could be terrorism, because again, you're looking at the expressionless faces of these women and this particular latest outrage. You're looking at something that is not natural. It is not natural for women to blow themselves up in the middle of a school full of children. There's nothing natural about that. There's something just completely insane, completely demented, devilish. And yet that's what we're seeing here. We're seeing that these things, these are spirits of devils working miracles that go forth to the kings of the earth and the whole world to gather them to the battle of the great day of God Almighty. "And behold, I come as a thief. Blessed is he that watches and keeps his garments, lest he walk naked and they see his shame. That's what we've got to be doing. We've got to be looking to our own righteousness, and not our righteousness, but God's righteousness, clothed with godly garments, and making sure that we are then prepared, and prepared for that time. And he gathered them together to a place in the Hebrew tongue called Armageddon. And Armageddon is this valley of Megiddo, and we're looking at that being the time. So it is significant. We must realize that what we are witnessing today is not something that we witnessed when Mr. Armstrong was alive. Suicide bombing by the Arabic militants or Islamic militants is a new phenomenon. And it is very, very significant indeed, because of the link between Islam, or the contention between Islam and the Holy Roman Empire. And the indication is that the Holy Roman Empire under the auspices of Germany will just simply march into Israel, and nothing will, without any kind of resistance. And again, we need to watch this very, very carefully indeed. And be aware that we are witnessing end time events when we see these kind of things.